This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Today on the radio show, we got a busy show today. John Martin joins us in the next segment. We'll see what John is emotional about. Although, you know what, Jeffrey, I don't know, like it was last week, someone was accusing him of being emotional and overreacting to Memphis football, and then look what happened. I think he was just...
Harbinger.
Visionary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he was just anticipating what was to come. John joins us in the next segment. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. Lakers are in town. Jeffrey, that's always a big one. Lakers are in
always
town.
Always a big one.
LeBron James is in town.
Anthony Davis?
Is it the hottest ticket? Are the Lakers still?
It seems to me that they're still a bigger draw than the Warriors.
I think
because it's not just LeBron. It's LeBron and it's the Lakers. Correct.
There was a time when Steph at his zenith was maybe bigger. I think about is walking around FedEx Forum before games and talking to families that drove in from somewhere else.
Yep.
And there were a lot of 13-year-old boys who came here from literally hundreds of miles away.
One time you wrote about Steph. A kid from Nashville, right?
Yeah, but they came from everywhere to see Steph. It was their Christmas present, and they drove here from St. Louis or whatever. Like that happened a lot. I feel like the Steph mania has ebbed a little bit, right?
I think that's definitely people true.
Now you see them both as these wondrous relics, right? All-time greats, wondrous relics.
There's more nostalgia there's more nostalgia towards them than there is like the pure peak mania.
You still want to see them, but here's the truth. In the grand pantheon, LeBron is ahead of Steph.
Yes.
And so you're right. The Warriors, as an organization, don't bring their own...
Right. There's not baked-in Warriors fans. It's like the...
It's you know what it is? It's a little bit... Even like as great as the Pats were with Brady, the Pats don't have fans everywhere like the Cowboys and Steelers do, right? The
Cowboys
and Steelers are institutions that have fan bases everywhere, draw everywhere.
Totally agree.
Irrespective.
I would even argue the Niners have more... Institutional fans than the Pats.
In other words, the Steelers and the Cowboys did that by winning. They didn't just do it by existing. Like they became part of the fabric of every city and of American sportsdom by winning. So why didn't winning do that for the Patriots? Why didn't winning create Patriots fans everywhere? I think it just... The Patriots fans that you see at other places now are still displaced Bostonians. They're from the diaspora.
Sure.
Right?
My gut says it's because...
They were so intensely unlikable.
Well, they only have like... Yes, I know that they made the Super Bowl in 85 and they made the Super Bowl in 97. But there's not like this sustained period of just unbelievable success. It's one run. And then I think the other problem is... Like with the Cowboys and the Steelers is they're the quintessential winners when you only got to see two teams.
That's true too. Can you even build that
right now?
Like can you build a new sports sort of institution?
Because we can.
Is there one recently that has become one? Like someone in the last 30 years that's become awesome that has created a fan base everywhere for that. I think the Warriors are actually one of the closest.
They sucked for so long.
Warriors, they were a plucky. They'd have good, you know, some good runs and whatever. But the Warriors, but they still haven't built up as a team, irrespective of Steph. When Steph goes away, how much, I got to go see the Warriors. Whereas it clearly lasted for the Lakers. It clearly lasted for the Celtics. Let me ask you this, Bulls fans, I do think there were Bulls fans created by Michael Jordan.
I think the other thing that
it's been hard, man.
Like the other thing is, like, as we're talking through it, I think the other aspect of it is sports has become more player based
and less team based.
Correct. Like you have LeBron fans. You don't have Cavs fans or Heat fans. It's like LeBron fans.
Most of these big institutional fan bases, Alabama football, correct, whatever else, were created in another time.
Correct.
Anyway, Lakers in town. Chris Harrington will join us. He also gives us a weekly recap of what's on in the theaters. We'll talk to him about that as well. And then Sam Hardiman will join us in the second hour as well. We'll talk to him about the election, not so much on a national level, which was a butt-kicking, absolute butt-kicking. And I will continue to wish good things for America, as I would have no matter who won. But that was, holy smokes. You know who's having a bad day? Pollsters, Jeffrey. Why would you ever pay any attention anymore to any polls?
I thought we did this in 2016. Like, I thought we did this 10 years ago. Like, when everyone's, like, asking me about polling numbers, like, I don't care.
Yeah, it's
so, like, they're so categorically wrong.
And my 3-second analysis of it was, no matter how many times Charles told you that the economy was great, here's the truth, and you saw this all across the world, and no matter what the government was, the government in power, when your prices went up, was voted out because people are mad about their groceries. People are mad about how much they pay for a Happy Meal. And the staggering stat for me was she didn't do better than Biden in a single county across America.
Manhattan.
She did not do better than Biden. And of course, that's because inflation hadn't happened when Biden ran last time, and it did now. So even though inflation is in fact down to, you know, practically 2% now, it has been fixed. The prices aren't coming back down, and people are mad, and so they vote the party in power out of power. And there we go. I'm hoping for good things for America for the next 4 years. We'll talk to Sam about local stuff. There was, interestingly enough, we're now going to have, we have a residency requirement for the mayoral race, is it just from the mayor? I think it's whatever, which you didn't have before. We now have runoff, elections. And so we would have had a runoff election in this most recent mayoral election. You wouldn't have someone winning with whatever Paul Young won by, whatever, you know, 18, 22% of the vote, whatever it was, whatever he won by.
I would say it was like 22.
And then all three gun referendums not only passed, but passed overwhelmingly. Again, they're purely symbolic. They have no impact on actual gun laws. And one can debate whether it made sense to tick off the people in Nashville by doing this when you're counting on them to give you money for FedEx Forum and all sorts of other things. But they did it. And I'm not surprised. It's always been pretty clear that that Americans generally, Americans want to have their guns. Americans want to be able to have their guns. Americans don't want anyone to take their guns. And Americans don't think that some reasonable regulations, it's outrageous to have some reasonable regulations. Clearly, you have to define what reasonable is. Those three referendum all had, you can look at the particulars, but Memphians 80% to 20% on all three voted in favor of those gun reforms, which will not be enacted because they're, at this point at least, purely symbolic. We'll talk to Sam about all of that in the second hour. I noticed, Jeffrey, there's a dog in your car.
Indeed.
In fact, we both, apart from whatever drama happened on the national and other level yesterday, we each had some drama yesterday. You had a dog, Rocco, has now been...
He's been fixed. He had a big day yesterday,
Been fixed. And so he's wearing the cone.
He's wearing the cone of shame.
In the car.
Yes.
Normally, you bring Rocco in here, but with the cone, you're afraid he'd be banging into stuff, basically, and creating a ruckus.
And he's very, with the cone, he's so agitated. He's like, he just like can't stop moving.
My stupid Bernese Mountain Dog, Gus, who is magnificent and gorgeous, he had his nuts cut off fairly recently. And for about 2 minutes, he's like, what the hell is happening with this cone? And then he just cheerfully adapted. He said, oh, this is my new life in a cone.
It's not going to be Rocco.
Banging into stuff cheerfully, like has to adapt a little bit. But that is awful, the cone. Okay, Jeffrey, I had my own drama yesterday. As you know, I drive a 2006 minivan that I inherited from my ex-mother-in-law.
As one does.
As one does. And the brakes have been...
shoddy at best.
Well, I mean, it's not like I don't stop, but it creates a hell of a commotion
sound
when I try to stop. I know it's metal on metal. It's been a little bit. So I brought it in, and I'm thinking, what are you thinking? What are you thinking the bill is going to be? $700-$800?
So did you need new brakes or brake pads?
Well, here's the problem. He called me, Ron Archer, and I like him right there, right near us.
Right next to Three Little Pigs.
I like him. I do like him, and I trust him. There are times they've told me there's nothing wrong. Like, that's a good sign, right? But then he started throwing me words like calipers. So they needed calipers, pads, everything. Like, they needed everything. And it's $1,200. And he said...
Yeah, I mean, you're coming up to the point
there's
that
this
your
bearing.
Car's almost 20 years old.
My car is almost 20 years
old. You're coming up to the point where it costs more to fix
There is this moment when you think, is it time? Is it time to swap in the old junker? What do you think I concluded?
Fix it.
Of course.
Yep.
Because if I had, I'm not, let's be honest, I'm not spending $40,000
on a car. A, you don't want to go shopping for another car.
But really, driving a 2006 minivan is my anti-theft device. So I enjoy that about it. And then the other thing is I wouldn't ever spend $40,000 or $60,000 for a car, but I don't want to go spend $20,000.
Right.
So I can be driving down the highway tomorrow by spending $12,000. And so I'm going to do that. And
$1,200
instead of $20,000. And so
you're predictable.
But it doesn't make me happy. Anyway, there was also other drama last night. We had the playoff. I didn't honestly the whole campy stuff they were doing with the election. Stop that. That was just stupid. Honestly, I was trying too hard. It's just stupid. If you wanted to watch the election was on.
Correct.
You didn't have to be doing this.
You didn't have to seek
precincts are reporting from Ann Arbor or from Austin or like that was just
the Sun
dumb.
Belt states.
It's just stupid. With all due respect,
I kept thinking about was like, how long do you think they spent writing that?
Too long. It was
exactly.
It was dumb. The standings. Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, Miami, Texas, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, Notre Dame. Is that too fast for you? That's the top 10. After that, it's Alabama, Boise State, SMU, Texas A&M, LSU, Ole Miss. That's 16. Iowa State, 17. Pittsburgh, Kansas State, Colorado, Washington State, Louisville, Clemson, Missouri, Army. If you're interested in it, you've probably seen it. So I didn't spend a lot of time with the actual ranking. The amazing thing about the ranking is people can mock the AP polls and those polls all you want. And we do here acknowledge the absolute uselessness of political polls. But the Associated Press poll... damn accurate.
I think 15 of 17, right?
Because nailed it, and the only thing really that was only significant difference was Ohio State and Georgia were inverted.
Right. And it didn't matter in the bracket because Georgia, for all intents and purposes, is the 2 seed because the Oregon and Ohio State can't both be conference champions.
Right. So it didn't really matter. So so there you go. So the takeaways... I mean, the one that quote unquote everyone's talking about is BYU.
Yeah.
BYU is at 9 and here's the thing, because BYU is a conference champion, they're gonna get a bye. And right now, it's hard to be too outraged on behalf of BYU because of where
they're functionally the same play. They're gonna be the 3 seed. If all things stay the same, they'll be the 3 seed no matter what.
Right. So the question though is, if they lose a game, might they in fact get passed by Boise State, or is there a chance that Boise State will pass the Big 12 champion? In other words, the four highest ranked conference champions get the byes. Is there a chance that could be That the Big 12 champion could not be that team?
Yes. I think, though, the Big 12 champion would have to have 2 losses.
I think that's probably right.
I do think there's a legitimate chance. Now, would I bet on it? Probably not. But like, you're going to need to see a situation where either Colorado or Kansas State or Iowa State loses another game that ends up being the Big 12 champion.
To me, what the BYU example is more significant because of this, because of the way it's structured. It really doesn't matter to BYU right now, right, at all. But what it does illustrate to me is something that I don't think should shock anybody, which is, in the end, the committees pick who they like, irrespective of quote-unquote resume. They pick who they like, and who they like is often influenced by name brands. And I go to, if you look at BYU and their resume, they have beaten the number 13 team in the country and the number 19 team in the country. Okay? Undefeated, and they've beaten the 13 team and the 19 team and their number 9. Penn State, for example, is not undefeated and does not have a single top 25 win. And they're number 6. Why? Texas doesn't have a top 25 win. BYU has 2 top 25 wins. Texas is 5. You can go through this, like, honestly, you can do the same thing with SMU and why SMU, if you compare SMU's resume to Miami's, and the reason it's not just that BYU as a brand is not held in the high esteem that Penn State is. I mean, we know. What do we know as Americans? That Penn State is better in football than BYU, right? Yeah. Like, it's not just that. It's the team that they've beaten. The bias against the brand bias, which, by the way, is rooted in our experience too. It's not just it's not just abstract and money driven. It's also rooted in what we have seen with our own eyes, right? Is that these teams from these conferences with these brands tend to be better over history. But it's the problem with BYU. It's not just that BYU's brand is less glamorous than Miami's brand or than Penn State's brand. It's the teams that they've beaten. I tell you, they've beaten the 13th team and the 19th team, and I tell you, Penn State does not have a single top 25 win, or I tell you that Texas doesn't have a top 25 win. But then I tell you that the team that Texas has beaten are Michigan and Oklahoma.
Right.
That's the
kill shots.
Yes. And what BYU has beaten, those 13 and 19 teams, are SMU and K-State. And by the way, when that SMU game, like, it was a boring game. It wasn't particularly interesting. It was a field goal fest on a Friday night. We didn't know it had any meaning at all.
100%.
And so,
if anything, all we thought it meant was, well, there goes SMU.
Right.
SMU's done.
Right. Right. So there is a brand bias here. There's, of course, and that relates to Memphis. Like, as here we are in the city of Memphis, you see that all the time. You used to see Memphis basketball all the time. In seedings, there is and was a brand bias. It's just 100% true. You can't get around it.
I do wonder, though, because I think we reached the same conclusion, though. But was it a brand bias or is it preseason bias? Because to me, what I kept looking at is the teams that kept getting the benefit of the doubt were the teams that
had that boat going in.
But to your point, those teams,
equally irrational.
Correct.
Because once you have a resume, you should preseason rankings.
The season has to matter.
You should look at the resume. GP used to talk about this all the time when he did his top 25-1.
Yep.
You look at the resume and you look at the blind resume and you say who has done more. And in that resume, yes, we do include margin of victory, all that. Like, I'm not saying that stuff doesn't matter. Game control, whatever stats you want to use. But the problem is that they're often like, we just think they're better. And they don't come out and say that.
But like, Ward Manuel kind of did.
Yeah, he did. He said eye test.
Yeah, he said eye test.
He basically came out and said eye test.
Like, we think they look better.
And so you have what you have. And, you know, I don't know. Like, Texas is five. Texas is five.
Correct.
What the hell have they done?
Well, Jeff, you saw them go into Michigan and win week two, right?
Yes.
Yes. Well, no one else has done that, right?
And they beat Vandy. Honestly, the best one is Vandy. The best one is Vandy.
Well, I mean, to me, it's like, if you want to talk about outrage, like, Vandy should be ranked.
And Vandy should be ranked, and then they would have a ranked win. But that is their...
The problem, though, is Vandy lost in double overtime to Missouri, so therefore that's why Missouri's in there. I did not buy the conspiracy that Missouri was just in there to prop up Alabama. I do not buy that. I think it's they probably wanted to put Vandy in, but Missouri had beaten Vandy, and they and Missouri has one fewer loss, so they put in Missouri.
Over at ESPN, they did an outrage thing, and they compared they compared blind blind resumes, and here's Team A.
All right.
Team A is 8-1.
Okay.
Number 13th strength of record, 2 wins versus ranked opponents, 578 opponent win percentage. Okay, that's number 1.
Okay.
Number 2 is 7-1 instead of 8-1. Number 15 strength of record instead of number 13, 2 wins versus ranked opponents, just like the previous. The first team lost to number 22, the second team lost to number 91, and a 567 win percentage. So team 1 is SMU, A or B or whatever you call it, and team B is Notre Dame. And so SMU has a pretty clearly better blind resume than Notre Dame. But SMU is not going to outrank Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Notre Dame also has easily the worst team in the the worst loss of any team in the top 25.
Yeah, I guess my big takeaway from all of this was this kind of went the way that I expected, which is 4 Big Ten teams,
yeah,
4 exactly. SEC
right,
teams,
yeah, right, exactly.
Notre Dame, 1 ACC team, 1
100%.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like it's like. We started with a predetermined outcome.
Yes, we did.
Then we had to fill in the details.
Yes, we did.
We had the outline.
The games, by the way, fascinating. Like,
for sure.
It would produce. I'm not outraged. I'm not outraged by any of this.
No, and not only that, it's like it's great games at like great venues.
It's great games at great venues. There is nothing about this that outrages me, but it does. The fix is in, man. Like if you're good for SMU for doing what they've done. Like it's incredible that SMU buys their way into the ACC and now here they are. It's unbelievable. And if you're a Memphis fan, should depress the hell out of you.
I guess my argument though for SMU is like when people were trying to say that they were screwed, SMU was allowed the opportunity to stub its toe at home, and they still have. They still control their destiny into playing into this.
Any of these teams, that is the beauty of it. I didn't find it that valuable that Joey Galloway kept telling us it was meaningless because there's more games to be played.
Right.
I get that, Joey. Like, that was his answer to everything. There's more games to be played. Of course there is. But where you are now, if we're doing the show, like, it does have some meaning. And they asked, over at ESPN, they asked the question whether Ole Miss got screwed. Because Ole Miss is behind.
I can tell you what Aaliyah Wright thinks.
What does Aaliyah Wright think?
Yes.
Ole Miss is behind all of the other teams that are basically in their same situation, right?
But as I told her, your problem with Ole Miss is you can't be ranked ahead of LSU. You lost to LSU.
It's funny. You got to go to this. So here's the argument for Ole Miss, okay?
All right.
There are 3 2-loss teams. 2-loss SEC teams ranked ahead of Ole Miss, which seems to be a perfectly reasonable consensus if you look at the AP poll, too.
Yep.
But are we sure that's reasonable? 2 stats we like to look at to measure a team's quality are success rate, how often does a team make a play that improves its odds of winning,
yep,
and explosiveness. Measure the differentials in each between offense and defense, plot those out, and you'll get a pretty clear look of who's truly dominant in college football this season. And basically, it shows the Rebels have 2 losses this season, each by 3 points, both in games they outgained the winning team. They lost to LSU on the road, and yes, somehow lost to a dismal Kentucky team. But hey, LSU lost to USC too. It's been a weird season. SP Plus, that's the stat, loves
Bill
Ole Miss.
Conley, yeah.
The Rebels checked in at number 4 there, behind only Ohio State, Texas, and Georgia. The FPI,
yep,
that's another
Football
metric,
Power Index,
ranks the Rebels 5th. In ESPN's game control metric, no team is better. Ole Miss has the third best average in-game win percentage. That suggests a lot of strange twists and bad luck was involved with its losses. These are things the committee should be evaluating when comparing like teams. How about this comparison?
All right.
And then they go Team A, 7-2, 23 points per game scoring margin versus FBS, one loss to unranked, three wins versus SP plus top 40. That's Team A. Team 2, also 7-2, 19 points per game scoring margin versus FBS, one loss to unranked, same, three wins versus SP plus top 40. And basically, one is Alabama and one is Ole Miss. The first one is Ole Miss, and the second one is Alabama, which is ranked ahead of Ole Miss. Why is Alabama ahead of Ole Miss? Well, the answer is because they beat Georgia.
And guess what Ole Miss gets to do Saturday?
And they get to beat Georgia. Yeah. No, you're exactly right.
And by the way, as I've told Ole Miss fans, that offensive success rate, do you know what it is in conference play? It goes from, what was it, 52%? 50%, something like that? Like, it's down to 42.
Honestly, I don't feel bad for Ole Miss fans.
Like, they have, lose to Kentucky.
Don't lose to Kentucky. And honestly, don't lose to LSU.
And by the way,
you shouldn't have lost to either.
It's trending right now. I'll at least forgive the LSU one. Like, that was a tough place to play, and you couldn't hit the knockout punch. And guess what happens? That's what happens at Tiger Stadium at night. You were playing Kentucky at home, and you're going in to control the game, and you fumble. But the success rate goes down to 43% in conference play.
Here's a question. If you make it to a conference championship game, and he was asked this question, and he said he didn't, the committee hasn't thought.
Yeah, he gave a wonderful non-answer.
If you make it to a conference championship game and therefore take another loss, right? You lose the conference championship game. Are you better off being a team that didn't make it to the game at all and didn't take the L? What are they going to do with that?
I think when I was trying to parse through Ward's answer, I think his answer
said,
was,
I think
it depends on which conference championship game. Right? Like, that was kind of how I took his answer. Like, if you're in the SEC and the Big Ten, it's not going to matter. If you're in the ACC, if you're in the Big 12, if you're in every other league, all of a sudden you might as well go and win that game.
I think you nailed it particularly. And here's the truth, though. Like, I talk about the brand bias, but it's based in reality. Those are the best conferences. Like, it's not like...
Well, and right now, even more so, they're probably the best rosters because they're the ones spending the most money. By the way, is it really shocking that SMU and BYU, I don't know if anyone's aware of the financials of both institutions, is it really shocking that they got it together?
Right. All right, so there you go. Anything else from that last night that particularly struck you?
Rank Vanderbilt.
You want Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I think they're going to lose this weekend.
Then we got some massive games this weekend.
Oh, yeah,
massive games this weekend. That is the beauty of it. It sets up.
But November. Yeah. My whole deal is I didn't like when people were like, it doesn't diminish the regular season. Well, it kind of does because you can't have your guts ripped out for a loss. With that being said, it makes November so much better. Right. We have anxiety bowls all over the place.
All right. In other matters, before we get to, again, we got John Martin coming up next, then Chris Harrington, and then Sam Hardiman.
The Grizzlies are favored?
That. Anthony Davis is questionable. And okay. Luke Kennard is questionable. Well, I think they're 1-3 on the road trip. Lakers have not played well on the road. And so Lakers but got
Anthony
off.
Reed, Anthony Davis being questionable makes me feel like he's going to play.
I don't know.
Again, you and I have been very clear on this. That foot, young man.
Right. Rest.
Sir.
Rest up. Right.
Get that bad boy healthy.
So, Luke Kennard also questionable, and that's good news.
Typically what we've seen is when you get upgraded to questionable,
he's like right over doubtful. Yeah. He goes to questionable. Feels like he's going to play. Grizzlies, as we saw in the Brooklyn game, the Grizzlies certainly could benefit from his shooting, whether he'll come in and start knocking him down right away. We shall see, but he is Luke Kennard, so... I like
well, of course, you know, the shoulder injury cost us the Lakers series in 23.
Here's my question about the Grizzlies. I have a couple.
All right.
One is, I don't know if you saw this, Devontae Parker said that
the receiver?
He said LeBron. He said Ja is the most, what's the exact quote here? He said that he is the most athletic. My notes, Jeffrey. My kingdom. My kingdom for my notes.
We're talking Louisville
Devontae
receiver.
Adams, I'm sorry. No, okay. Devontae Adams. I'm sorry. Who is it? Okay. The most athletic professional athlete in the world is what he called Ja Morant. The most athletic professional athlete in the world.
I mean, the problem is I don't know how we define that, but I do know this.
Let me ask you this. Simone Biles is pretty athletic, isn't she?
Right. I don't even know how we would even define that.
How would you define that?
But to me, it's like, who can do the most stuff? You know what I mean?
Run fast, jump high.
Catch everything. It's
catch
like
hands.
Hand eye, everything. Like,
that's the thing. There's a lot involved.
Right.
He runs fast. He jumps high. He then has there's also a skill set. In other words, sprinters run faster.
Correct.
Jumpers run higher.
Well, if sprinters were all that mattered, like they'd be in the NFL.
You then have to be able to throw a ball in a hoop.
Correct.
And to be able to handle the ball and dish a ball and see the floor and all that stuff.
Take contact. Like
I think there is a reasonable argument that the NBA is our best athletes, period. And that
I think the NBA is probably our best collection of size and athleticism.
That's true. You got to be a monster.
Correct.
Even Ja's not a little guy.
Correct. I mean, Ja's what, 6'2"?
But like, whatever. You can put on any, you know, it's Tyreek Hill. I bet it's pretty athletic.
Yeah.
Who would you put?
Tyreek Hill definitely has fast twitch and hand eye.
That's the thing. He's got now, and he doesn't have the leaping.
But like, what are we doing about the decathletes?
Yeah, I'm not counting decathletes. But that's just me. I'm not kind of, yes, they can. They can. No, you're right. Like,
but like
can,
that's a test.
They can throw heavy objects far. They can run fast. They can freaking pole vault.
Correct.
They can do. But don't you feel like any NBA player that really dedicated, the best athletes who are NBA players who dedicated themselves to that enterprise could be better at those things than decathletes?
Yes, but I'm also probably sure that I'm wrong. But I do agree. Like, to me, there is an element with the decathlete. It's like, well, you just you're a better exerciser.
But what do you do with? I mean, you saw what Saquon Barkley did and what Garrett Wilson did recently.
By the way,
right?
Did you see the sideline views?
Yeah, it's crazy. I continue to believe that is the
too
one.
Too soon. Too soon. Next topic. Aaliyah went home early from work yesterday, and she said PTI was debating what was better, Ja's 360 layups or Saquon's hurdle. And obviously, it had to be Ja's layups, right? Totally. There's nothing that I'm really missing about Saquon at all.
What did they?
She said she didn't have the volume on, so she just looked up and saw all the runs.
Another reason why that game Monday didn't make me feel bad.
We got the highlights.
Deliriously wonderful Ja highlights, and we had the Zach Edey breakout game. In fact, okay, so that gets me. The first one is the best athlete in the world stuff. That is interesting to me, but.
I also think
sort of a summer conversation.
NBA is prone to hyperbole.
Yes. So, although it was interesting, it was an NFL player saying that about an NBA player.
Correct.
So, there you go. Do you feel better or worse about the Grizzlies than you did at the start of the season?
I'm going to say slightly better. Even though it comes from a place of worse. The worst would be the injuries are a thing. But the reason why I feel slightly better is if you would have told me, hey, they're going to be without all these guys for this amount of games and you're going to tell me they're 500, I would have been like, that's surviving.
Yeah, I think the answer is purely based on how you phrase the question. I feel like they continue to discover good players. You know, I didn't know Jay Huff existed. You know, I didn't know Jalen Wells was going to be an actual, as Chris would say, Jalen Wells was going to enter the chat.
Yes.
You know, I didn't know. I had some faith that Scottie Pippen would be pretty good, but he has been pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really did believe that Ja would come back as Ja, but my God, he certainly has come back as Ja. So
I've got the feels again.
If the question is, how do I feel about the enterprise long term, you know, the construction of the roster, the prospects of the roster, their assets, whatever, I feel actually better. I feel better about them. You know, because the Dez is hurt, but the Jazz come back as good or as ever. and honestly more committed to the defensive side. We don't even think about, knock on wood, his off the field court stuff anymore, right?
Totally.
And he's magnificent. And then they continue to find role players who look like they're going to be real role players. And so I feel better.
I agree.
But I also feel worse.
Right, because they
if the goal is to get it to, at some point, long-term, we've been talking about long-term and the window for a long time. The window very clearly is now and next year. And so there's only two left before Jaren's contract's up, right? And so it's now and next year. And so how do I feel about them short-term, given the injuries we've already seen? You're surprised that they're favored tonight? I feel worse about them. Because they're not being left behind, but the West looks tough as we expected, and they aren't getting off to, they don't have as many W's as I expected at this point, bluntly, and we're going to be waiting for Vince to come back, we're going to be waiting for Desmond Bane to come back, we're going to be waiting for Marcus Smart to come back. So it's purely, if you're asking me short-term or long-term. Short-term, I feel worse about them. Long-term, I feel better about them. Does that make sense?
Yes, I'm with you. You articulated it much better than I did. Sounds right. Like you're better with words.
We got John Martin coming up next, then Chris Harrington, then Sam Hardman. Busy day on the Jeff Calkins Show. I'll tell you, if you are getting something framed, head to the Frame Corner right there on Park Avenue, 5035 Park Avenue. What's the mall? What's the shopping center across from the
Eastgate?
Eastgate. It's right across from Eastgate Shopping Center. And you can walk on in there and buy a frame. Frames are nice little things to give out for Christmas. You can put a frame in a stocking, whatever else. But a really thoughtful gift would be to take some sports memorabilia or some collection of photos or a piece of art and head on in there and lay it on the counter and say, can you make this look beautiful? I want to give something, a memory that will last forever this holiday season. And the Frame Corner can do that. They are fabulous at custom framing. Again, it's 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. John Martin has entered the studio. We'll talk to him about what he's emotional about now. Next, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. I went to Ron Olson's. He was having a party because he's been doing radio for 50 flipping years. He's been doing radio in Memphis. And I lamented that I didn't wear my O'Call jacket. I didn't know it was going to be kind of a dress-up affair. And, like, there were people from, you know how this RSVP magazine used to exist? It doesn't exist anymore, where they take pictures at parties and stuff. I don't know what I was thinking. I look so much better when I wear O'Call. And so would you people, if you would wear O'Call. And many of you do. And, you know, it's you know what I know. You know what I've discovered, which is the clothes are absolutely spectacular. And the people are the secret sauce, and they go together. You can't have one without the other. The truth of the matter is, they steer me towards things that help me look my best. And so, during the holiday season, which is approaching, you'll want to be in there. Of course, it's a delightful shopping experience. But football season is still raging on, and you can still get this as a gift too, a hoodies, quarter zips in collegiate colors to give to your favorite football fan. Not some garish logo kind of stuff, but something you can wear to work. It's hoodies and it's quarter zips in colors of your Ole Miss Rebs and your Alabama Crimson Tide and your Memphis Tigers and your Arkansas Razorbacks and on and on. Go see our friends at O'Call. Joined now by John Martin. John, you were there at the Ron Olson party. You haven't done 50 years in radio. How many years in radio have you done? Can you imagine doing 50, 50
no, actually,
flipping years in radio?
I pulled him to the side and I said, you're going to be the last that can say they've done 50 in radio. I truly think.
I mean, I did.
Because he started when he was 20. Right?
I was kind of burned out of being the sports columnist after not quite 30.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Perrin has done 30 in radio.
Mm-hmm.
30 is a lot.
30 is a lot. 30 is a lot.
50 years in radio?
50 is almost unfathomable, really. and to have done it mostly, most of it, at the same place,
In the same market.
Yeah, in the same market, in the same, you know, company. You know, I you got to admire it, man. It's an amazing
run. So what
run.
Is, tell me this, what is Ron Olson's secret?
Well, in terms of his survivability and
it's not
longevity.
Just in terms of how he became.
Well, there is an element of survivability.
Yes, that's true.
There's an element of I kind of think he's you know, just like Thad, right? Like Thad in the NBA, he hasn't been a great NBA player for
what are you,
a few
what
years.
What are you saying about Ron Olson? He's not
no,
been great for
what
a
I'm
few
saying
years.
Is, no. What I'm saying
it's
is
kind of like Thaddeus Young.
There's an art.
He's never been an All Star.
There's an art.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
To being a pro.
Ron Olson is in the Hall of Fame.
He's in the Memphis Hall of Fame.
He's in the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He's in multiple Halls of Fame.
Probably going to be in the Tennessee
maybe,
Sports
maybe.
Hall of Fame.
I don't know. See where he ranked on our list?
Point is, yeah, believe me. Point is, there's an art, right, to lasting and sort of being a professional and being like where I was going to go is that, you know, Thad, again, was not necessarily, and Ron's getting it done, but Thad is like, he learned how to be a great teammate. He learned how to be likable. He learned how to, you know, just be a great locker room presence. And I think that's a big part of it because I think there are people that have come and gone in this building and in this business who were not.
Do you think
that.
How you treat people?
100%, 100%. Yes. And Ron is just a nice guy. Like he's a nice, funny, jovial, fun guy to be around. You know what I mean?
To me, what strikes me is in these polarized times, how can you not like Ron Olson? You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? In the end, it is a breath of fresh air. Like Ron. And that's after 50 years. You would think it could be stale air, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's a breath of fresh air because he just wants to connect with people in person if you meet him.
Yep.
Or on the radio. And he wants to connect people to other people. Like it's, I don't know how the hell you don't like Ron Olson. Not you, but I don't know how one would not like Ron Olson.
He's also just I don't know when it was. Maybe it was last spring. You know, He had paid attention to me on Field of 68, and he noticed that I didn't have anything on my wall behind me. He's like, "You don't have anything on your wall. Like, what do you know?"
Uh-huh.
And so he made me this piece. That unfortunately is too big to fit behind me, but he made me this whole big piece. I actually have it in my office here. It's a big long board with some. He painted it, and it's my name. It says John.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't ask him to do that. I didn't say, you know.
See, that's ridiculously nice.
And he did it for, you know, just because he wanted me to have something behind my wall. And I have been pulling his pant leg for a piece, you know, over the years. You know, I was
you
like,
can
I
can buy a piece, you know.
Can't buy a piece.
You can.
But I didn't
you
get a wedding gift from him.
I own a Ron Olson original.
Yeah.
On my wall.
Yeah. The guy's a talent. The guy's a super nice guy. And
you once fell for one of his lies.
Yeah, so I mean that's another part of Ron that you'll never we'll never get again. You know, like an element of Ron is that he gets away with completely lying about
it's
things.
It's called pranking.
Pranking.
It's
sorry.
Called pranking.
Pranking. Yeah.
It's called pranking.
Like it wasn't a harmful prank. Like although I'm sure he has probably had some of those in his career. He tweeted like his Twitter. I don't know if he tweets as much anymore, but he used to tweet all the time just total
absurdities.
Yeah, like. The King of England's here, you know, like in this particular instance, he tweeted just randomly that Kanye West just been spotted at the Memphis airport, you know, and like for me, like this is back in 2013 before Kanye kind of lost his mind, you know,
right.
It was a big thing, you know, and I was like, damn, what's Kanye doing here, you know, and then I ran by somebody like, who said that, Ron Olson? Yeah, he's always lying. He's just BSing.
I now have heard the stories of some of his pranks, and the one that really got me, that impressed me, was one that never hit the air. So it was when President Bush, the first, was giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom or something to Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart. And so they decide they're going to call Sam Walton. And they had Preston Davis was with the show then, and he did impressions. And so they called to the Walmart headquarters as President Bush, saying, I'm headed your way, basically. It was already set up for Bush to visit Bentonville. That's where he presented him the medal. But a call to talk to Sam Walton. At the headquarters, they said, he's not here. Let us give you his home number, Mr. President. They had some of the Secret Service agent call. That was Ron. Call as. So they call his home. They end up getting Sam Walton on the phone, and they have a conversation with him, you know, can't wait to be there, and they say a couple things. They say, Barbara would really like a couple of those hog hats if when we get there, if that would be okay. And then before they hang up, they say, you know, Sam, I've never called the hogs. Would you call the hogs with me? And so then Sam Walton and fake President Bush are calling the hogs on the air. I mean, in this taped whatever, together. They are calling the hogs. They're dying laughing back here in Memphis. Hang up. And Ron has this moment. And he says, you know what? I've had a good career. Sam Walton at that point was the richest man in the world. He said, if I play this, it is probably not going to go well for me. And so they called back and asked if he would be good humored if they played it. They revealed who they were. Mm-hmm. And the answer they got was, don't you dare.
Yeah.
And they buried it.
Never to be heard again.
Buried it.
That's sad.
Well, would you have played it?
No. I probably wouldn't even thought to record it or anything like that. I wouldn't, you know.
You do impressions.
I do impressions.
You are known for your impressions.
I don't prank call.
No,
you know?
I don't prank call.
I mean, come on, Ron.
Prank calls don't really, like, that was a thing that, like, I feel like that was like it peaked in the 90s.
We got pranked.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the
we got pranked by Ron. Ron called the show. This was when we were doing COVID. During COVID, we would have people call businesses in for 5 minutes and 2 minutes and tell us about their business, right? And some people really were benefited by this. Hey, I run a lawn care, or I got some bartenders here who now will move stuff for you or whatever else. And so this person calls in from Little Aardvark Daycare in West Memphis. And they're still open. And I was, you know, treating everyone. This is a very delicate time. And I'm like, oh, really? You're still open? Because everything was closed. This is a daycare. I said, you're still open? He said, oh, yeah, yeah. Every day we take the kids over to ride the greyhounds at the dog track. And this is the strangest thing in the world. The kids are riding the greyhounds over there. And I hang up. Jeffrey, I did not call him on his, I just was.
No, we were kind of like, well, that's unusual.
That was unusual. Right. Yeah. I totally bought it.
Well, and the worst was, because I had to call screen, and I know what Ron's voice sounds like, and I also know what Ron's impression voice sounds like.
But he got by you.
Yes.
All right, John, you're known for being emotional about things and overreacting. And just last week, you were accused by someone who wrote me of being overly emotional about Memphis football. Are you like a visionary? Are you a seer?
No, I'm emotional. I mean, that's, yeah. I'm so emotional, somebody complained to you. Amazing.
How are you feeling about him now? But you don't feel good. Like, it's funny. Here's the thing. People think that because you might be worried about, like, P.J. Haggerty. You didn't. Mm-hmm. You were skeptical about P.J. Haggerty.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make you unhappy that he's good, does it?
No, I thought he had an amazing second half. I was extremely impressed by him. I don't root against anybody, right? I don't root against anybody. It's just like when I feel things.
You say them.
Exactly.
And here's the truth about Memphis football. You are proven to be right. I was still, I will say this, a little surprised when I came in Monday, finished my show. And as you know, I'm an avid listener of your show.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Jason were legit talking about firing Ryan Silverfield.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely it's early to have the discussion, but I do think it's a conversation that will ultimately prove to age well. You know, again, it's
in other words, you think people will be having this discussion next year?
Yes.
Do you think so, Jeffrey? Will people be having this discussion? We're not having it seriously now, are we? I know Jason is about the merits of it, and I respect that. But in terms of the reality of it, I don't believe it's within the realm of reality. Or maybe you do.
No, I'm closer to you because, I mean, I still think the contract's going to get extended.
Right. So, but next year, if it's new quarterback, I mean, they'll still win a bunch of games.
I mean, the other thing is, like, next year they're going to have Antoine.
Right.
And
what's new?
Yeah, but what's more exciting than a young quarterback probably be awesome?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe. I mean, they have a 4-year guy that doesn't really look that awesome at times. You
yeah,
know?
But this guy's better than that.
I mean, listen, I get what you're saying.
You wouldn't have said that you would be better off with a new guy who hasn't barely played a snap in college football better off with Seth Hennigan before this year. But given what we've seen from Seth Hennigan this year,
right,
you might say
and
that.
And further, while he's a freshman, like it's like we've always talked about this. Like Seth, the best, like Seth kind of got overrated, I think, as a freshman.
Yeah.
Because like they, like he put up decent numbers, but then I think he got kind of unfairly criticized his sophomore year when they were losing. It's like I just think Seth's kind of been the same player for almost all 4 years, which is solid.
John, is Ja Morant the, let's see, what did Devonte Adams call him, the most athletic professional athlete in the world?
I mean, I'd have to curate a list, but I mean, he's near the top of it off the top of my head. I mean, I mean that's a big stamp there from, you know, from Devonte. I mean, the fact that he did that spin twice in the same game.
Crazy.
The fact that he's thrown alley-oops literally off his ass. I mean, nobody else is doing that, right? Like, nobody else in the NBA is doing things like that. I mean, LeBron at 40 is pretty damn athletic. I mean, contextually speaking.
But yeah.
I mean, at 40.
He may be the oldest, greatest 40-year-old athlete in the world, and at one point may have been the greatest athlete in the world.
Yes.
But he's no longer.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, Ant's pretty athletic, you know. Giannis Ant's is pretty athletic.
You know? Those are crazy athletes.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, I think he's in the you know, Nikola Jokic, obviously. You know, I think he's in the discussion.
Simone Biles.
Yeah. I can't believe you just let me get away with Jokic there. But maybe you think he's a great athlete.
I'm just trying not to get you too emotional. I don't like to come. Right. You know, I don't want to set you off.
You don't have to worry about that. No, I'm not going to be set off today,
John.
You're not even going to ask me about the Tiger basketball team.
Okay,
you're gonna have me an entire.
What do you think about the Tiger basketball team?
Well, I mean, I had to get you into that. I thought you were gonna kick me out.
I said, I was about to say, John, I'm gonna let you go in a minute, but first, okay. Before you go,
got it.
Tell me about the Tiger basketball team.
Well, yeah, listen, I thought it was very important to get that win, no question about it, because starting your season off with a loss at home as a 4.5-point favorite would have been about as disastrous as it gets. you know, if they commit and lock into being, you know, a defensive team like they were certainly in the second half. First half, they weren't getting back in transition. First half, they looked a little lost in that regard, but they definitely got after it, started flying around. The press looked like the best press I've ever seen from a Penny team in his time here. He's tried it before. He's had, you know, spurts, right, where he's going to do it, and then he comes off it.
Right.
He committed to it in the second half, and it really, really frustrated Missouri, and it was the difference in the
game. They came apart.
Right, yes, 100%. They didn't have any ball handlers. They didn't want smoke there. So if Memphis can do that consistently,
given how thin the roster is, though.
Yeah, no, it's
going to
be tough.
Are they going to be able to do that?
No, they probably won't, but they only did it for a half, you know? Right. I mean, they could do it for a half, and you know, you can sort of mix it up, you know? You can mix it up, and when you're going to, because they were doing it even at the end of the game, up 8, up 9, I was kind of surprised, you know. You can maybe not do it in those spots, right, when you're up 8 or 9, you know, you can call the dogs off, right, a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I thought there were some things to like defensively that you can build on. Musa was, like, honestly,
he was
wow.
Really, he was
I
mean, wow.
If you get that kind of player, you know, with him, then, you know, UAB lost at home to Vermont. That was a worse team than the one you beat at home, and UAB lost. So you've got to feel pretty good about their chance of winning the AAC after game one.
I'll be listening 11-2. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Josh Heisa is the person to call if you are selling your home. 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty. I've talked about this. When you're selling your house, marketing is key. And you hear honestly, what an aggressive marketer Josh is, because you want to get multiple offers. You know, you don't just want one person entering your home coming and giving you an offer for $60,000 below what you're offering your house for. You want to get multiple offers. And Trudy did that. She heard me talking about this, Josh, on the radio. She listed with Josh. Within days, she had multiple offers on her home. Josh offers flexible fees. Let you out of your contract at any time. It is Josh Heisa and the team at Keller Williams, 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Talk to Chris Harrington coming up next. Jeff Dawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.